On Thursdays, we read from your email.
And we start with praise for Elise Spiegel's story about the mental state of Katrina victims still living in trailer parks. She spoke to, among other people, Kim Penichero.
This is how I look at it. Everybody does go on with life. You know what? But we are down here and we are not okay. And I know y'all have other news, but peek in every once in a while. Just peek in.
Elise Spiegel's report riveted me and has left me numb, writes Kathy Paulskill of Paulsbow, Washington. I can only imagine how she felt leaving the trailer park. We need to hear more of these stories and others so these people are not forgotten.
Gina Beekman echoed that sentiment. That story broke my heart all over again, she writes. The forgotten people of the disaster are still forgotten, almost. Thank you for not letting us forget.
We are still going through all the emails we received praising Laura Sullivan's recent pieces on sexual assault of Native American women.
Nancy Barr of Houghton, Michigan writes, "Your series was an example of journalism at its finest. It opened listeners' ears, eyes, and minds to an until now unspoken tragedy. We as citizens of this country cannot sit back and do nothing now that we know of the problem."
From kudos to complaints about a line in a story we aired yesterday, a line we removed for the last feed of our program. The story was about the presidential campaign and how the candidates are handling gay rights issues.
This comment comes from Aaron Rosenthal of Oakland, California. You summarized your report on the impact of gay issues by saying Democrats hope voters will likely be more interested in Iraq, health care, and the economy than in sex. I think the word sex frames this issue inaccurately. The opposition that I hear to gay rights, particularly marriage, focuses on beliefs about what constitutes a family, not sexual behavior.
Tony Verona of Chevy Chase, Maryland, was indignant. How profoundly insulting. My gay identity is much, much bigger than my sexual behavior. And support for equal gay rights is much bigger than support for sex.
We apparently left a number of you hanging this week when we spoke with Tom Muller. He wrote a piece for The New Yorker about fake Italian olive oil, oil that's labeled as extra virgin but contains all kinds of things. Dave Herrera of New Orleans is one of the many listeners who wrote in. He said, "You forgot to ask the most important question of all. What can Americans do to ensure they're getting the real product?"
Well, Mr. Herrera, we've got your answer straight from Tom Muller himself.
The first and best way is to know the producer, actually know where the olives are grown and who mills them and who makes them into oil. Price is also a very straightforward way to gauge if an extra virgin olive oil is likely to be authentic. For imports, anything under about $10 per half liter is likely to be suspect.
And of course, Tom Muller says, there is also the taste.
Good oil, true extra virgin olive oil, must be, by law, peppery, pleasantly pungent, with some appreciable level of bitterness, and it has to be fruity. It has to remind you of fresh olives. Bad oil is often has an edge of rancidity. It can taste kind of cooked or meaty, and it's almost invariably bland and unremarkable in taste.
Finally, a correction. Monday, we ran an obituary for songwriter, producer, and singer Lee Hazlewood. During his career, Hazlewood wrote many notable songs. He did not, however, write the Peter Gunn theme song. That was the work of Henry Mancini, of course.
If you think something you heard didn't work, or if you like something you heard, we'd like to hear from you. Write to us by going to our website, npr.org, and click on Contact Us at the top of the page.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.